walks back in, sets down a fresh coffee. You stayed for the addendum. Good. This is different from everything we've done so far. We've been building a framework from first principles. Logic. Structure. Elimination. Now I want to show you what that framework looks like when it's already been used by people who didn't know they were using it. We're going to talk about the 2021 Nobel Prize in Physics. Three lectures. Three laureates. One underlying logic. Let's go. Addendum Lecture 1, The End of the Prediction Dream. Leans on the podium. For most of its history, physics had a dream. The dream went like this: if you know the rules, and you measure carefully enough, you can calculate the future. This wasn't arrogance. It was earned confidence. The dream worked. You could predict where planets would be centuries from now. You could calculate exactly where a cannonball would land. You could design circuits and know precisely how current would flow. Physics was the science of prediction. That was its power. That was its identity. Then physics met systems that refused to cooperate. Starts pacing. The climate. The weather. Materials with disordered structures. Systems with many interacting parts, feedback loops, sensitivity to tiny changes. These systems didn't break the laws of physics. Every molecule still obeyed the rules. Every interaction was still lawful. But prediction failed anyway. Not because physicists were sloppy. Not because computers were too slow. Because the systems themselves destroyed the information needed for prediction. Small differences got amplified. Details got erased. The future became unknowable in principle, not just in practice. Stops. This was a crisis. A quiet one, but real. If physics is the science of prediction, and prediction fails, what's left? The answer, and this is what the 2021 Nobel Prize recognized, is that physics had to grow up. It had to distinguish between two questions it had always conflated. Are the rules deterministic? Can the outcomes be predicted? The answer turned out to be yes to the first and no to the second. The rules are exact. The future is unknowable. Both are true. Walks to the window. The first laureate I want to talk about is Sukuro Manabe. Manabe worked on climate. And his contribution, at first glance, looks almost embarrassingly simple. He simplified. Instead of trying to model the entire Earth with all its oceans and continents and forests and clouds, he imagined a single column of atmosphere. Just air, going straight up. Heat coming in from the sun. Heat going out to space. Air rising and falling. That's it. One column. Turns back. People were skeptical. How could something so stripped down tell you anything about a planet? But here's what Manabe understood, probably before he could articulate it. Models don't survive by being detailed. They survive by respecting constraints. Most complicated models fail. They become opaque. They accumulate hidden assumptions. They break when you push them. They contradict themselves when you scale them up. Manabe's model was simple enough that you could see what it was doing. And what it was doing was capturing something real. Sit on the desk. When he increased carbon dioxide in his model, something specific happened. The lower atmosphere warmed. The upper atmosphere cooled. That pattern, warming below, cooling above, wasn't something he put in. It emerged from the physics. It was a structural response to the constraint of energy balance. And here's the key, that pattern didn't depend on the details he'd left out. It survived simplification. It appeared in more complex models too. It matched observations. The pattern persisted. Leans forward. From the perspective of everything we've built in this course, Manabe's success makes perfect sense. He wasn't trying to predict next Tuesday's weather. He was trying to find what the system couldn't avoid doing. He was looking for structural necessities, not contingent details. And structural necessities are exactly what survive elimination. They're what's left when you strip away everything that doesn't have to be there. Manabi's model survived because it had captured constraints, not decorations. Stands up. Now, the second part of this story involves something that made physicists deeply uncomfortable for a long time. Chaos. You've probably heard the phrase butterfly effect. A butterfly flaps its wings in Brazil, and 3 weeks later there's a hurricane in Texas. This isn't poetry. It's mathematics. In certain systems, including the atmosphere, tiny differences in initial conditions get amplified exponentially. After enough time, two trajectories that started almost identically end up completely different. Paces. For a while, this seemed like a disaster for physics. Weather obeys deterministic laws. Every molecule does exactly what the equations say. And yet we can't predict the weather more than about 10 days out. Not because we're not trying hard enough. Because the information required for longer prediction gets destroyed by the system itself. The atmosphere is a machine for erasing details. Stops. But here's what emerged from that apparent disaster. Weather is unpredictable. Climate is not. Weather is the specific trajectory. Will it rain next Thursday? Will the temperature be 72 or 74 degrees? Climate is the statistics. What's the average temperature? What's the distribution of rainfall? What patterns recur year after year? The trajectories are chaotic. The statistics are stable. Walks to the board. This is exactly what we talked about when we discussed universality. Remember? Different microscopic starting points, same macroscopic behavior. The atmosphere forgets the details. It erases specific information. But it preserves structure. The fine-grained information is fragile. The coarse-grained patterns are robust. That's enforced forgetting. The system itself performs the elimination. What survives is what we can actually study. Turns to face the class. So Manabi's contribution was showing that climate structure persists under simplification. You don't need to model everything. You need to model the constraints that matter. And the chaos, the apparent randomness of weather, isn't a bug. It's the elimination mechanism. It's what destroys the details and leaves only what's stable. Physics didn't give up on understanding. It refined what understanding means. Not prediction of trajectories. Identification of what remains. Gathers notes. That's lecture one. The dream of perfect prediction ended. And something better replaced it. Next time, what happens when you stop treating noise as the enemy and start treating it as a tool? See you then. Addendum lecture 2, when noise became evidence. Walks in, writes noise on the board, then draws a line through it, then erases the line. I couldn't decide whether to cross it out or not. That's actually the point of today's lecture. For most of the history of science, noise was the enemy. Noise was what obscured the signal. What corrupted the measurement. What stood between you and the truth. The goal was always to eliminate noise. Filter it out. Average it away. Pretend it wasn't there. Klaus Hasselmann, the second laureate we're discussing, proposed something radical. What if noise isn't the enemy? What if noise is a tool? Leans on the podium. Let me set the stage. By the time Hasselmann came along, physicists already knew weather was chaotic. Short-term unpredictable. Sensitive to initial conditions. A mess. But there was a deeper worry. If the fast, visible behavior of the atmosphere is wildly unpredictable, how can we trust anything about its slow, long-term behavior? If weather is chaos, how can climate be stable? It seemed like the randomness should destroy everything. Like the noise should corrupt not just predictions, but the very possibility of understanding. Starts pacing. Hasselmann's insight was counterintuitive. he said, the chaos of weather shouldn't be excluded from climate models. It should be built into them. Think about that. Everyone else was trying to filter out the noise. Hasselmann said, put it in explicitly. Treat it as an ingredient. Stops. Here's the analogy he used. Think about a small particle, a pollen grain, say, floating in water. The particle jitters around randomly. Brownian motion. It's being bombarded by water molecules from all sides, and the bombardment is random, so the particle wanders. Now, if you watch just the particle, you might think its motion was inexplicable. Random. Lawless. But actually, it's not. The statistics of that random motion tell you something real about the water. The temperature. The viscosity. Physical properties of the medium. The randomness isn't destroying information. It's carrying information. Walks to the window. Hasselmann proposed treating weather the same way. The atmosphere has fast fluctuations, storms, fronts, pressure changes. Day-to-day chaos. But those fluctuations drive slow, systematic changes in things like ocean temperature, ice coverage, large-scale circulation patterns. Just like random molecular bombardment drives the slow diffusion of a pollen grain. The fast randomness pushes the slow variables around. And the statistics of that pushing are not random at all. Turns back. From the framework we've developed, this should sound familiar. Noise functions as an eliminator. Unstable patterns get torn apart by the randomness. They can't maintain themselves against the constant buffeting. Stable patterns survive. They're compatible with the statistical properties of the noise. They persist despite the fluctuations. Randomness doesn't create structure. It removes what can't hold. What survives the noise is exactly what we can trust. Sit on the desk. Now, here's where it gets practical. Once you treat noise correctly, once you stop fighting it and start using it, you can test climate models in a new way. The old question was, can you predict next week's weather? The new question is, does this pattern persist over decades? You're not asking for accuracy on short timescales. You're asking for stability on long timescales. And stability can be measured. Stability is testable. Leans forward. This had a profound consequence. It became possible to distinguish between different causes of climate change, even in the presence of overwhelming variability. Think about all the things that affect climate. Volcanic eruptions throw particles into the atmosphere. Solar output varies slightly. Greenhouse gas concentrations change. Ocean currents shift. All of these are happening simultaneously, mixed together with the chaotic noise of weather. How do you figure out which cause is responsible for which effect? Stands up, energized. Hasselmann's answer, look for fingerprints. Not predictions. Fingerprints. Persistent signatures. Each cause leaves a different pattern. Volcanic eruptions produce one kind of signal, temporary cooling that fades. Solar variation produces another, a pattern that follows the sun's cycles. Greenhouse gases produce a third, the warming below cooling above pattern that Manet found. These patterns don't look the same. They have different shapes in space and time. And here's the key. If a pattern survives the noise, it's real. Paces. Think about how you identify a person by their fingerprint. You don't predict their next movement. You don't calculate their trajectory through a room. You look for patterns that remain despite variation. Ridges. Whirls. Scars. The fingerprint is stable. The person's behavior is variable. The identification works because some features persist. Climate science learned to do the same thing. Stops at the board. Within the framework of this course, this is a crucial moment. Persistence becomes evidence. When a signal survives elimination by noise, when it remains visible after averaging, perturbation, and scale change, it earns the right to be treated as causal. Not because it's big. not because it's obvious. Because it doesn't disappear. Turns to face the class. So what about human influence on climate? That was the question everyone wanted answered. Are humans actually causing the warming? Or is it natural variation? Solar cycles? Random fluctuation? Hasselmann's methods made it possible to ask that question rigorously. Human influence should leave a specific fingerprint. A pattern that's different from volcanic patterns, different from solar patterns, different from what you'd expect from noise alone. Does that fingerprint show up in the data? Quiet now. It does. The human fingerprint is there. It's distinct. It's persistent. It survived the test. Not because someone wanted to find it, but because it didn't disappear when they looked for it. Sits back down. Here's the deeper shift this represents. For a long time, physicists believed that causation required control. If you couldn't isolate a variable, run the experiment both ways, manipulate the system at will, your claims would always be provisional. Correlations, not causes. Hasselmann's work weakened that assumption. It showed that causation can be inferred from survival, not just manipulation. A signal that endures noise, scale change, and aggregation has passed a stronger test than one observed only in ideal conditions. This isn't lowering the standard of evidence. It's finding a standard that works for systems you can't put in a laboratory. Leans forward. From the framework's perspective, this is a shift from explanation by design to explanation by elimination. We're not manipulating the climate to prove causation. The climate is manipulating itself. Noise is running the experiment for us. Constantly. Relentlessly. And what survives that experiment, what remains visible despite the noise, that's what we can call a cause. Gathers notes. So, Manabe showed that structure persists under simplification. Hasselmann showed that causation persists under noise. Both of them found what survives. Both of them let elimination do the work. One more laureate to go. And this one is going to take us somewhere strange. Next time, what happens when disorder itself becomes the answer? See you then. Addendum Lecture 3, Disorder as Structure. Walks in, doesn't sit down, stands at the window for a moment. Last lecture of the addendum. Last lecture of the course, really. We've talked about Manabe, who found structure that survives simplification. We've talked about Hasselmann, who found causation that survives noise. Now we talk about Giorgio Parisi. And with Parisi, we enter territory that's genuinely strange. Turns to face the class. Up to this point, you might think climate science is special. Climate is big, slow, messy. Maybe it needs unusual methods. Maybe persistence-based reasoning only works for planetary systems with chaotic weather. Parisi destroys that excuse. He worked on something completely different, disordered materials. Spin glasses. Systems where the components are arranged randomly, where competing influences make it impossible to satisfy all constraints at once. And he found the same logic operating there. Leans on the podium. Let me describe what a spin glass is. Imagine a material where little magnetic elements, think of them as tiny compass needles, are scattered randomly through the structure. Each needle wants to align with its neighbors. But the neighbors are arranged randomly, and some neighbors want opposite things. This needle wants to point up because of its neighbor to the left. But it wants to point down because of its neighbor to the right. It can't satisfy both. This is called frustration. Not the emotional kind, though it would be frustrating if you were a tiny magnet. It's a technical term. The system cannot satisfy all its constraints simultaneously. Starts pacing. Now, what happens when you have a frustrated system? In an ordinary material, everything settles into a nice orderly arrangement. All the magnets point the same way. All the atoms line up in a crystal lattice. There's one optimal configuration, and the system finds it. In a frustrated system, there is no optimal configuration. no matter how the needles arrange themselves, some constraints are violated. Every arrangement is a compromise. Stops. For a long time, physicists didn't know what to do with this. The system seemed pathological. Broken, somehow. Experiments on spin glasses gave inconsistent results. You'd cool the material down, measure its properties, and get one answer. Cool it again, and get a different answer. It looked like the physics wasn't working. Like the theory was incomplete. Parisi showed that the inconsistency wasn't a bug. It was the answer. Walks to the board. Here's what's actually happening in these materials. Because no single configuration satisfies all constraints, the system doesn't settle into one state. It settles into many states. Different compromises. Different ways of balancing the competing demands. Each state is stable, it's a local solution that doesn't immediately fall apart. But none of them is unique. None is optimal. They're all just good enough. And when you run the experiment again, the system might find a different compromise. A different stable state. A different answer to the same question. Turns to face the class. This was deeply unsettling to physicists trained on the idea that systems have ground states. Single correct answers. Optimal configurations. Parisi said, no. Some systems have landscapes. Not a single valley where everything rolls down to. A vast terrain of valleys. Many stable points. No unique minimum. Sit on the desk. From the perspective of this course, this should sound familiar. Optimization fails. Perfection is unattainable. What remains are configurations that don't break under the full set of constraints. Not the best arrangement. Just arrangements that survive. That's emergence through elimination. Exactly what we've been discussing. Leans forward. Here's what Parisi figured out that nobody else had. Even though these systems don't have a single answer, they have structure. The structure isn't geometric in the usual sense. It's not about positions in space. It's about relationships. How do the different stable states relate to each other? How does the system move between them? What does it remember about where it's been? Parisi developed a mathematical framework, replica symmetry breaking, it's called, that captures this relational structure. The details are technical. But the insight is profound. Stands up. Structure is not defined by what is built. Structure is defined by what survives repeated testing. The spin glass doesn't have a pretty crystal pattern. It has something subtler, a stable set of relationships between possible states. When you perturb it, it responds in characteristic ways. When you push it, it pushes back predictably. When you let it explores certain regions and not others. That's structure. Real structure. Just not the kind physicists were used to looking for. Paces. Now here's the part that blew everyone's minds. Parisi's mathematics, developed for these weird magnetic materials, started showing up everywhere. In biology. In neuroscience. In machine learning. In optimization theory. In models of collective behavior. Systems that looked nothing like spin glasses turned out to follow the same patterns. Why? Stops at the window. Because they face the same constraints. Any system with limited information, competing demands, and irreversible processes ends up in the same situation. It can't optimize. It can't find a unique best answer. It can only find compromises that don't immediately collapse. And when different systems face the same constraints, they converge on the same solutions. Not because the details match. Because everything else fails. Turns back. This is universality. We talked about it back in Book 1. When the admissible region is narrow, when only a few patterns can survive, different systems end up in the same place. Not by coordination. By elimination. Parise's methods spread because they describe what survival looks like when optimization is impossible. And optimization is impossible more often than we'd like to admit. Returns to the podium. So now let me put the three laureates together. Manabe showed that climate structure persists under simplification. Strip away the details, and something real remains. Hasselmann showed that causation persists under noise. Let randomness do its worst, and real causes still leave fingerprints. Parisi showed that structure persists under frustration. Even when no perfect answer exists, stable patterns emerge. Leans forward. Different domains. Different systems. Different technical details. Same logic. In each case, the core achievement was not better prediction. It was the identification of what remains stable when prediction fails. That's the signature of law-like behavior. Laws are not imposed from outside. They're what survives. Quiet now. The Nobel Committee probably didn't think about it this way. The laureates probably didn't think about it this way. But this is what they were doing. They were practicing persistence-first reasoning. They were letting elimination identify structure. They were finding what survives rather than what's optimal. The framework we built in this course, from scratch, from first principles, was already operating in the most successful physics of the last 50 years. We didn't invent it. We just made it explicit. Stand straight. Let me close with something the Nobel background paper says. It says that physics once imagined itself as the art of prediction. The work honored by this prize reflects a different maturity. It accepts that much of the world cannot be forecast in detail. And it insists that understanding is still possible. Not by chasing every fluctuation, but by attending to what remains after fluctuations have done their work. Gathers notes for the last time. That's the same boundary we've traced all semester. Not the edge of knowledge. The edge of what can persist. Looks at the class. You've been a good audience. 40 years of teaching, and I can still count the groups that stayed engaged through material this abstract. I hope something sticks. Not the details, you'll forget those. But the orientation. The way of asking questions. Not why was this chosen, but why did alternatives fail? Not what is this for, but what does this survive? Not what is the optimal solution, but what doesn't collapse? Heads for the door. If you remember nothing else, remember this. The universe doesn't build upward toward meaning. It sheds what cannot last. What remains looks like order only because everything else disappeared. That includes you. That includes me. That includes everything we've ever known or loved. We're the residue. The survivors. The patterns that didn't fall apart. And that's not nothing. That's everything that's possible. Pauses at the door. Class dismissed. For real this time. Walks out.